Wenn vom Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 5, Chapter 8, the character of Bharat Maharaj, text number
such uncontrollable affection for a deer. This was definitely due to his past karma. The king was so engrossed in petting and maintaining the deer that he fell down from his spiritual activities. In due course of time, insurmountable death, which is compared to a venomous snake that enters the hole created by a mouse, situated itself before him.
Although very difficult to give up. Duschanja, oh, very difficult to give up. Kritaya Abhijatasya, his sons, born of his own heart. Where it is in the translation, it says, after giving up the association of his own son and family. Right? But there should be sons. He had more than one son, didn't he? Yeah. Interesting. Right to the BBT and told. Didn't say. That doesn't make sense. He gave up his son. When he had many sons, he had 100 sons, didn't he? Well, okay. So, as we'll be seeing in later verses, Bharat Maharaj, at the time of death, would be forced to accept the body of a deer due to his attraction for the deer. In this regard, a question may be raised. How can a devotee be affected by his past misconduct and vicious activities? In Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 54, it is said, Karmani nir dhati kintu chabakti vajam. For those engaged in devotional service, bhakti bhajan, the results of past deeds are indemnified. Indemnified. What does indemnified mean? Who would like to say indemnified?
Nullified.
Nullified, yeah. Yes. No longer responsible. One's no longer held to account for one's past karma. No? According to this, Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. Must be that Maharaj Bharat purposefully became over addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. So what does that mean? He purposefully became over addicted to the deer. Purposefully. To immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time he was awarded the body of a deer. This was just to increase his desire for mature devotional service. Although Bharat Maharaj was awarded the body of an animal, he did not forget what had previously happened due to his purposeful mistake. He was very anxious to get out of his deer body, and this indicates that his affection for devotional service was intensified. So much so that he was quickly to attain perfection in a Brahmin body in the next life. It is with this conviction that we declare in our Bhakti Godhead magazine that devotees like the Goswamis living in Vrindavan, who purposefully commit some simple activity, are born in the bodies of dogs, monkeys, and tortoises in that holy land. Thus they take on these lower life forms for a short while, and after they give up these animal bodies, they are again promoted to the spiritual world. Such punishment is only for a short period, and it is not due to past karma. It may appear to be due to past karma, but it is offered
to rectify the divinity and bring him to pure devotional service.
Om Bhagavan Jayandasya Nanasavataya Chakshu Nitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Angus, Pancha Anga Bhakti, Sadhu, Sangha. And you know that, interestingly, Bharat Maharaj wasn't associated with devotees. He was performing his bhajan in solitude. And the association with the deer brought out a desire, if you like, for company, albeit in the form of a. I noticed that recently we were staying with my sister-in-law in Adelaide when we were there a couple of weeks recently, and she's taken to looking after, or so it's hard to get what's going on. I think the cat has got her wrapped around the paw, or his paws, and he, and otherwise, my sister-in-law is living alone, but now she's got a cat. And I was thinking of him, of how she talks to the cat, she feeds the cat. There wasn't a cat in the scheme of things. Well, it illustrates this point, you know, that, and you see it. Prabhupada makes a point, you know, we're all servants, we like to serve. And if we don't have somebody to serve, then we create someone to serve. So it's interesting, even though Bharat Maharaj was doing his food, you know, he's absorbed in his bhajan, very elevated stage, he deliberately chose to associate with the deer. And that association, and you know, more or less out of sentimentality, something that we have to watch as devotees. Out of sentiment, he chose to serve the deer, and then as a consequence neglected by that association, he neglected his son. And allowed the relationship that he deliberately cultivated with the animal to eclipse his devotional service. And Prabhupada says here, purposefully, this is hard to understand. But that's the explanation. Why did Bharat Maharaj, who was such an elevated devotee, fall down in this way? Because he chose to. It was his choice. The conclusion. You want to find out what? One of the main point, if you want to find out the main point of a purport, then we look for words like conclusion. The conclusion must be that Maharaj Bharata purposefully became over addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. Interesting. And Krishna, due to his affection for his devotee, then awarded him the body of a deer. But as we'll find out, not very, very special deer.
You know, we're taught that all you have to do is take a shower, even if you're an animal, you'll get a human form of life. Right? And Prabhupada says that dying is like going to sleep. It's like going to sleep, and then you wake up in your next mother's body. After 8 months, Prabhupada says, well, after 8 months, you wake up and you realize, get me out of here. Is what's going on inside underneath his tummy at the moment. There's a little fellow in there. Do you know what this is worrying you? Do you know?
Says a little.
What?
The doctor says a little.
The doctor knows, but he didn't tell you?
Yeah, just says a girl.
Yeah, okay, all right, well, we'll wait and see. Yeah. He's saying, let me out of here! I'm in love! Well, so, let me out of here. I won't make the same mistake again. But even if it's our last birth, we still, Prabhupada explains in there, you know, we have to be prepared to take birth again, because in the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita gives us instruction, different levels of instruction. And the first Guyam, this really nice article written by Sacharaj in the latest BTG. And he talks about how there are three levels of secrets in the Bhagavad Gita. The first level of secret, Guyam, is Guyam, Guyatara, and Guyatamam, the topmost secrets. But the first secrets of the Bhagavad Gita are that as an example, for those who take birth, they must die. And for those who die, they must take birth again. This is a kind of karma. Secrets of karma are revealed in the Bhagavad Gita. So, even this may be our last birth, we still have to take birth again in the family of residents of Vrindavan in the Jewish world. Right? Then that will be our last birth in the Jewish world. Then will be, and that's explained here also by Prabhupada, where Prabhupada says that fallen yogis may take birth as animals in Vrindavan. Oof, that's an interesting prospect, isn't it? But very short period of time. I remember I went to Vrindavan in 1989, pretty sure. Around about that time. And I think it was 1989. It was a very auspicious pilgrimage to Vrindavan. It was the first time that Ajit Rupa and I had spent, you know, an extended period of time, over a month, in the Dharma. And on the way to Vrindavan, both our watches stopped. Both our watches stopped. And we were staying in the Krishna Balaram guest house. No hot water. Right. It was December, it was January. And it was cold. Everybody, this probably happens even now, everybody, or at least all of the men, go to the Prabhupada's house after Mongolia to the Chapa. The cold in Vrindavan is such that it just gets in your minds. And really out of the chance of it, because the tendency is to go to sleep. Get warm and go to sleep. But anyway, I remember there was this little dog, puppy, little dog. And he'd been hit by a truck or a car, so he had a hole in his head. He was a cute dog, but, and so his life was very short, and in the time that I was there, the fly, he had maggots in his head, so the maggots were eating his head out. Heavy. So take birth in Vrindavan as an animal. It will only be a short period of time. That's a short period of time. Then go back home back to Godhead. So I was watching this young, because he was coming around, he was hungry, and the devotees were compassionate, would give him prasad. He was in the alleyway outside of outside the guest house. And then eventually, at some point, he left his body. So, externally, it doesn't look very good. Externally, it doesn't look like a very good situation. But if you've been born as an animal in your garden, it's kind of like, whoa, Hare Krishna. But just a short period of time, and one goes back home, back to Godhead. Having taken birth in Vrindavan. And of course, you know, it's a reminder that the real world is not a place to, you know, set up camping. And so Bharat Maharaj also got that reminder by the arrangement of Krishna. He took birth as a deer, but in the association of devotees. So, interestingly, in the association of devotees, so he could hear the kata. Srimadam Swara Katara Krishna, the Krishna Katara. Of course, the Katara of the spiritual world is something else, isn't it? Katara Gamanam. Natyam Gamanam. Every word is a song, and every step is a dance. That's where we want to go. Api Vena Priya, what is it? Priya Sakhi. And a constant attendant, or the constant companion of the devotees is what? Vena. The sound of Krishna's flute. This is the place where we want to be. But in the interim, there's a small period of time spent in Vrindavan where Krishna's performing his pastimes, or here Prabhupada says in Vrindavan as an animal. for that little bit of purification before the final departure for the spiritual realm. So, interesting, I attended the VIAG, the second of the VIAG courses. And I didn't really spend time with Derek Turin, because in those days, VIAG was man only at that time. And it was our first time in Vrindavan for a prolonged period of time. Cold showers every, a cold bath every day. Ooh, very good stuff. Didn't have hot water in those days. And it was deeply enriching experience. And we didn't have our watches weren't working, so we didn't buy a clock. But in the temple, you can run your day by the ringing of the temple bell. And Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on making sure that the devotees would ring the bell all the time. If the bell wasn't exactly on time, the Prabhupada would call the temple commander or the temple president and say, "Why is the bell ringing?" So that's how we used to tell us, wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, with the sound of the bell, ding, ding. Okay, two more hours of sleep. And we were being marked also, tested on our sadhana, so we had to fill out your sadhana, you had to get a full morning program to the evening program, So we ran our schedule on the ringing of the temple bell. And I think in Vrindavan, to get to the Samadhi Arti, you've got to be up 4:15, right? Because the Samadhi Arti is at 4:15 on Mongol Arti, effectively, where the Guvashika prayer is chanted. It's not chanted at Mongol Arti. They sing Vibhava Resesha. Is that right? So you've done this a few times. So, cold showers and running out scheduled by the ring of the temple bell. And I think that year also there was an earthquake. This might have been another occasion. There was an earthquake in in the Punjab, I think it was, or maybe further north. I remember waking up at midnight or 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and my bed was shaking. And I was thinking, what's the situation shaking my bed for? That's where I fully thought it shaking my bed. And then it stopped. And that was when we found out next day that there was a big earthquake and people had been killed, actually, as a result of it. And the interesting thing, so it was really quite an experience that it was a spiritual experience in the Dharma, in Vrindavan. And then to top it off, we were leaving Vrindavan and we got to Koshi. Is it Koshi? And And I remembered my watch, and I said, oh, I better get a battery or something. We'll get a battery when we get to Delhi. You know, so I put my watch out, and the watch had started. And it was on the right time. It was amazing. And so the Ginger Rippers, her watch was, had also started. It was also on the right time. So we thought, wow, that's far out. But you can't create that. That's just magic, the magic of the Dharma. So, very, you know, the holy Dharma, Vrindavan Dharma, even though it appears, you know, dirty, and there are so many, especially now, you know, in those days, you could walk on a pilgrimage path and out on the, I guess it was the Jamuna side. Once you got past the Jamuna, then all of the path was just sand. Remember that? See that? It was beautiful. You could just walk and chant, and but now it's all, you know, concrete and bricks and dust and dirt, and it's tractor town, basically. And so, you know, it's hard to then, because the externals are so harsh and so it's so jarring on the senses. It's hard to then perceive the spiritual realm that lies, it's there, but it's covered over. Because Prabhupada said this is a, you know, this is what happens in the Kali Yuga. The holy places are, in that song by, what's her name? Janavi. And Guru Mani sings on that song, and it's a song about the river Jamuna. But how the place is covered by hotels. You know that? There's that verse, that line. The holy place is covered by hotels. But so it's hard to see the spiritual realm in that environment. The externals cover the spiritual potency. So even here, you know, Maharaj Bharat has taken birth as a deer, so his external coverings kind of eclipse the spiritual potency of his personality, of his character. And also the dearness or the affection that Krishna has for Maharaj Bharat, even though he's fallen down. He's being put into the body of a deer, special circumstance. The body of a deer, but no forgetfulness. So his spiritual identity is still intact. Just a short, but in the association of the devotees, we should never underestimate or devalue, if you like, the association of the devotees, because in the association of devotees, one experiences Krishna praying, actually. Very important. And of course, in the association of devotees, then we can engage in a full and complete sadhana. In fact, you know, devotee association is essential for making spiritual advancement, because otherwise, how do you have kirtan, sankirtan? Have you tried kirtan by yourself? You tried it? Why do we go out and chant Hare Krishna? Why do we go out and chant Hare Krishna? No, the one reason.
Okay,
you have to speak.
Yeah, purify others. Yeah, what else? Why do we go out and chant Hare Krishna?
Spread the holy name.
Spread the holy name. Yeah, why do we spread the holy name?
To attract the
mercy. Yeah, attract others. We want to attract others. We don't want to have a sankirtan party by ourselves. We want to have it with, we want to, because it's, it, the nature of bhakti is that it's relished with others, primarily, at least in the beginning. We may, in our final years, and even Srila Prabhupada didn't do this, but I don't think that our family Acharya didn't do this. But Bhakti Maitakura did. And you know, the traditional system of Varnashram is that in the last 15, 20 years of our lives, we give up everything and just focus on bhajan. But it's interesting, Prabhupada did not encourage it. In fact, he discouraged it. Right, you know, there's that story of the devotee in Mayapur who was disciples of the Prabhupada, and he decided he was going to chant 300,000 names a day like Hari Das Thakur. And he had a little hut or a little pumpy by the Ganga, and Prabhupada just didn't take it seriously. And because Prabhupada knew, you know, that this is not going to last. And so eventually he left. Prabhupada didn't really discourage this near jana bhajana. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also discouraged it. Right? Because it's extremely difficult to perform. You have to be very, very advanced and very, very detached as a result of that advancement. And Bharatana is an example also of why this Nirjana Bhajana is not a good idea. Right? And why the association of devotees is so important. Because in that association, then, you know, you can live your household life, you can live your manaprastha life, you can even live your retired, renounced life. But in the association of the devotees, where everything is still focused on Krishna, which is the proper form of renunciation. And so in the association of the devotees, we're always doing things for Krishna, and that's the mood of renunciation that's required. And so, you know, detaching ourselves and going and living in the forest and what you know, Madhukani and Kuti, Duck, Bahu Duck, and Parivrajacharya, you know, that may not be, let's say half are already excluded from being Parivrajacharya. Which half, Aditi? Which half do you think? What am I referring to? The women. Traditionally, in Vedic culture, the women don't take sannyas. And then how many of the men are going to be, you know, that kind of sannyasi? Please raise your hands. Even our sannyasis in ISKCON don't do the traditional sannyas. Why did Prabhupada encourage the devotees to take sannyas? What was the reason? Anybody like to say?
What's it? They can turn around
people. What? To rack up 3 points? Preach. Yeah. Our sannyas is for preaching. For preaching. That's what Prabhupada encouraged. So this is why the association of devotees is so, you know, integral to us making spiritual advancement. Sadhu Sangha, Sankirtan, Bhagavat, Shravan, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing the Bhagavad Gita regularly, that means we need association. And even living in a sacred place or associating in a temple. Temple is the central, the focal point of a community, of an ISKCON community's activity, certainly this one. Why we come to the temple? To associate with the devotees. To worship the deity. What? The other day, who was in class? Was it back? I can't remember. Saturday. What's that? It was back, wasn't it? And anyway, I came out. I'm not sure I went back to this class, that might have been the day before. But anyway, a few days ago I came out. It was Sunday morning, I think, actually. And the kids were there, the young kids. And they said, when are we going to open up the temple? I said, it's already open. And they said, no, we don't want, so we don't have to book. We like to come to the temple so we can see Krishna. And, you know, after everybody's had darshan or kirtan or whatever, then there's a stroll down the backyard. What do we go down the backyard for? Some prasadam seva. Prasadam seva, yeah. And you won't get that without the devotees. It's to get this, you know, it's a sacred place. Prabhupada says this is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan. But we get that because of the devotees. And you know, I'll tell you something else that one of the kids told me. Who was it? It was Bala. Bala is a good friend of mine. And he gave me, he said, can we change the temple around? Oh yeah, how do you work? He said, well, first of all, he said, can we shift the temple here? And he said, the kitchen should be the children's playground. We got our priorities all wrong. But isn't that interesting? The kids have their zones around the place. And Sri Sada told us the other day. And they have names for spots in the temple. Parts of the garden and different locations in the temple actually have different names. Radharani's garden. These are things like that. I haven't found this kids out and I've been lifting for the last 40 years. I haven't looked at the temple campus from the perspective of a child that was born here. Very interesting. When I was in Adelaide, before I met the devotees, I was working for William Connors, which is a book publisher. I found this book. They had their commercial activities, but they also had a library services. And I was friends with the lady who managed that part of the sales, and there was a book that had all, it was a compilation of children's ditties. You know what I mean by a ditty? I'll give you an example of a ditty. It's raining, it's falling, the old man is snoring, he bumped his head on the end, but he couldn't get up in the morning. But you heard that? If you went to school in South Australia, you would have heard that. Right, so
there's a whole subculture of these ditties and jokes and songs and tunes that exists in the children's playgrounds of the schools. So if you go to you've probably got your Hindi Punjabi versions of these kind of things as well. There's a subculture. So we have a subculture that we should explore. That's the culture, the subculture of the kids. So anyway, we need the association of the devotees. Very important. And that's one of the lessons that we can learn from Bharat Maharaj's difficulties, in that he's unique in that he was isolated and not in the association of devotees. And so they made the wrong choice. Because it says here he purposefully did it. He purposefully chose to associate with the deer and then was forced him to take birth as a deer. But of course in a very special circumstance and protected by Krishna, even though he was born in an animal's body. Does anybody have any comments or questions? There's more could be said on this. But you might need to take your mask down because I can't.
Okay, on the, in the third floor, it puts emphasis on purpose, right? And we understand that Bharat Maharaj had a free will. But, for me, I find it difficult to identify when I'm doing something out of free will, because often I do something wrong and I learn, I was under the modes because I was, on the mode of ignorance or something. So how do we differentiate between free will and the three modes when we do something?
Good question. Very difficult to determine. But can I phrase your question in a different way? How do we determine what is our karma, right, and what is our choice? Right? What is our karma, and what is actually our purposely doing something that's against the principles of bhakti? So, what's the answer? Does anybody like to say? Really?
If you don't have a choice, then it's karma. And
if
you have a choice, then it's...
It's very good.
I would say that.
Maybe. What do you think? See, because maybe our karma is, our previous choices determine what reactions we get. And we may make a choice based on reactions of our previous choices. Right? So it's hard to work out what's, it's all, and this of course is very difficult to understand the intricacies of karma, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita. So sometimes it's difficult to work out, was that my choice or was I pushed into that by my previous choices and the reactions I got. That's it. You have a realization?
Yeah. Is it for devotees it's mercy and for non-devotees it's karma?
Yes, you can look at it like that. That's how we're learning to do certain things. Madhu. Give Madhu the microphone. Because she's very clearly suffering.
What I understand and also listening from lectures is that the free will is expressed. It's only expressed in our choice to between Krishna and Maya, and details of that choice is more according to laws of nature, and that can be also expressed based on our level of consciousness. Consciousness.
Consciousness.
Yeah.
Develop consciousness.
Yeah, in the sense that how more advanced the body with pure consciousness, the laws of nature has less influence. So it's expressed more his natural identity, so it's the free will is fully expressed in that way.
Yeah.
But because if we are covered, our consciousness is more under the influence of laws of nature.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're influenced then by passion or ignorance. And that's why we recommended to follow the sadhana bhakti, because that sadhana bhakti automatically elevates to a platform of goodness. And in that state of consciousness, we're then able to choose the appropriate option. Right? So yes, modes of nature are going to influence us, and again, in the association of devotees, if we're following the sadhana process, and you know, this is provided for us by Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada says that the Krishna consciousness movement is. Operates under the auspices of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami gives us hints, or not hints, he gives us guidelines in the 64 items of devotional service. This is what we should be doing. These are the activities that we should be performing. Also in Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami gives us things like Atyahara Prayasas Cha. He tells us, don't eat too much or don't acquire too much. Don't endeavor too much for material things, because that will destroy your bhakti. Right? So, under the guidance of the devotees who are following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, and following Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, we are following Rupa Goswami, so in that sense we are Rupa Nugas, and we follow those sadhana principles, then if we engage in those activities only, they're the right kind of choices that we should make. Right? And sometimes we learn up here. Under the influence here of free will, Bharat Maharaj has made a choice. So we also have to be careful not to be like Bharat Maharaj. And the difference is, I guess, following sadhana or not. Right? Rupa Goswami is very kind and given us the guidelines by which we can make the right choices.
Thank you. So we say that purposefully over addicted, because you know, Prabhupada last day he purposely did eat for a few weeks, so to see the reaction of the disciples or to teach them how to die. And we can see sometimes the kids sometimes to the parents, they see you purposely going to trouble and see how the parents are reacting. Same thing maybe Bharat Maharaj was purposely doing how Krishna, because he is so elevated, so to see how Krishna is going to pick him up or something like that, can you say?
I didn't hear it for some reason. Well, I don't have my hearing aids in, that's why. But I think I only caught half of that. Can you say that again, a bit slower?
That, you know, Prabhupada, the last stage,
he
did eat then the disciples were so in anxiety because he's not eating, without eating he's going to die. So he was like seeing, teaching the disciples how to serve spiritual master, how to have affection to spiritual master, to increase the affection.
Yes, yep, all of those things. Yep.
And sometimes even this material life, kids sometimes do things, do some stupid things to see how the parents are reacting.
The children? That's, that means I didn't get.
No, yeah. Sometimes in material world, sometimes kids do knowingly some things is not good, and they do and see how the parents are reacting to see.
Oh, the children want to get their parents' attention?
Attention, yeah, they do that.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, a lot of kids do that. Because sometimes parents are busy and the kids are behaving really, really good, parents are very busy. Yep. So they want to see how these people, how they are going to.
What's that got to do with Maharaj's family?
No, but this in a devotional service they do because Prabhupada did that, and Bharat Maharaj was doing that, even seeing sometimes he is so elevated, so he was purposely doing, seeing Krishna is going to pick me up, he will pick me up. So his desire became intense.
I haven't seen that written by the Acharyas anyway. Perspective. So I'm not sure whether we should take that seriously or not, that particular perspective. That's an interesting take on the situation, but that's Prabhupada doesn't suggest that.
Then why did Prabhupada
eat last
for a few weeks?
So Prabhupada is the main reason why Srila Prabhupada, the symptoms of Prabhupada's leaving his body were that he had diabetes that was not managed or treated, plus also that damages your kidneys. Not only that, Srila Prabhupada has other blockages, I guess we could say, in his urinary tract, for want of a better word. And so that also impacted his kidney damage. Kidneys were severely damaged. And your kidneys are pretty essential for managing blood pressure, heart rate. They help manage a whole range of functioning of the body, so Prabhupada had lost his appetite because his body wasn't working properly. And, the appetite problem had been going on for months prior to, the final time, in the final pastimes in the garden. But a lot of it was basically because Prabhupada's kidneys were failing. That was the main cause of his body, collapsing effectively. And so that's why he was not eating, because he just didn't have an appetite. Digestion wasn't working, wasn't functioning. Not an uncommon way to, just people live their body. So, but it's true that Srila Prabhupada was teaching us and his disciples how much affection he had for them, and how to leave the body, tolerate, and so much he had to tolerate. But also, he taught us that one should remain dedicated to one's service as a spiritual master. And so he kept on translating. Right? And so he illustrated how much, that service meant to him. It was a service that he offered to his Guru Maharaj. How dedicated he was to the publishing of his books. Right? And how much he wanted us to publish and distribute books. This is one of the things that Prabhupada taught in his final, one of many things. And so here you see Prabhupada, Jai Ved Maharaj holding the dictaphone, and Prabhupada was finishing that last chapter of the 13th chapter of the 10th canto, 13th or 14th. Pranas prayers. Right? So, and you know, in the association of the devotees, again, teaching us the importance of the relationships that we have with the devotees. And yeah, the affection that we should have for the devotees. Okay, let's finish, shall we? I don't know if we answered your question, but I'm good.
Yes.
Pandurasina Bhagavatam Kijanisaya Bhagavatam Kijanisaya Gaurabhaktam Kijanisaya.